You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, August 27th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. We're on vacation this week, folks, yet today we have some all-new material for you. Audio from the Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown fundraiser for their legal defense. The evening includes speeches by attorneys and activists who work in this field and are supportive of Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown. The introductions will come through the night. I emceed this event last week. We have had to do a little bit of audio processing, and I think the order of the speakers is a little jumbled up because of editing, but nevertheless, that's largely irrelevant. You will hear from I think just about everybody. We may have cut out a couple for time. We'll be back tomorrow with a members-only show. Members will hear from the Majority Report Deep Archives, filmmaker Mario Van Peebles, and Bishop Desmond Tutu from the old Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and I from 2004 and 5. On Thursday of this week, there's a schedule, there's a plan for a large strike, low-wage workers across the country. We will hear a repeat of an interview I did with Sarah Jaffe, labor reporter, on the first fast food strikes in New York City when they took place. And also, I think on that show, I broke down an argument I had on Up with Chris with a member of President Obama's finance committee, basically a plutocrat, and broke it down and went through, this is from last year, or the beginning of this year, I should say. And so that will be available to everyone. Members will get a bonus of an interview with Thomas Frank, the author of What's the Matter with Kansas. And then on Friday of this week, apropos of the revelations that we're hearing about the NSA, the sentencing of Chelsea Manning last week, we will hear an interview I did with Thomas Drake and Jesselyn Raddick. Thomas Drake, of course, the NSA whistleblower, Jesselyn Raddick, an attorney for whistleblowers. We'll also hear an interview I did with Tim Shurick on his piece about that NSA whistleblowing. And then on Monday, we will have a Labor Day show. So enjoy today's show, audio from the Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown fundraiser that took place last week to support their defense. Some fascinating discussions about supposed cyber crimes in general, but also about the cases of Barrett Brown and Jeremy Hammond. Barrett Brown is on the cover of this month's Rolling Stone magazine. thanks very much for coming out tonight. My name is Sam Cedar. I am the host of the online show, The Majority Report. I do a terrestrial radio show called Ring of Fire. I want to, just before I start with remarks and introductions, just want to remind you that standing directly across from me is the auction. There's some great artwork. There's guitar signed by Dave Navarro. Please, at any time this evening, go up, bid on something. At 10 p.m. tonight, the auction will be over, and at that time, you will collect your winnings and pay for them. So please, by all means. I don't have too much to say. We've got some great speakers as well as some videos tonight from folks who couldn't be here. This weekend, I found myself having dinner with someone I don't particularly like, which happens. We were talking of the story of Glenn Greenwald's partner being held in Heathrow for 9 hours as they essentially harassed him, ostensibly for terrorist reasons, I guess. And the argument I had with this over dinner was that I was told repeatedly that we are not living in an unprecedented era of national security, establishment security overreach. And without getting into the finer details of the argument, I have a sense of where most of you stand on this. The idea that this is not unprecedented is of little comfort. It only indicates that, as a society, we have not learned the lessons of a fairly recent past. The only differences I think that we're seeing now, and I think it's fairly obvious that I do think that we're living through an unprecedented time of national security overreach, but it's obviously a function in some respects, if not the catalyst being the terrorist attacks in 9/11, but also I think fueled by technology. And Thomas Drake was on my show some time ago and referred to the national security establishment as a self-licking ice cream cone. And I think that's a fairly apt metaphor. The advances in technology have simply been the fuel in which this national security establishment is growing. And it has become a self-licking ice cream cone in the sense that secrets and security is really now simply justified by the establishment's desire to have more secrets and security. And simultaneously, that technology has become a massive threat to this self-licking ice cream cone. I don't want to carry the metaphor too much, but it's melting the ice cream cone quicker than they can lick it in some respects. And we are seeing, in my estimation, an unprecedented amount of vindictiveness, prosecutorial overreach, panic in some respects from this establishment that has a lot of money and a lot of power wrapped up in maintaining itself. And whether it is what we see with Glenn Greenwald's partner or the cases of Thomas Drake or Bradley Manning or Aaron Schwartz or Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown, we are seeing this over and over again. And it's very important that you all are here. And, of course, I don't need to tell you that it's not enough to simply bid on something today and contribute, but also to spread the word. I think, sadly, our society is not quite caught up with what's going on in many respects, and it's up to all of us here in this room to amplify the words you'll hear tonight and these stories so that we can bring a higher level of consciousness to what's going on in this country. So without any further ado, let me bring up Kevin Gallagher. He's a writer, musician, and systems administrator based in Western Massachusetts. currently pursues activism on issues related to digital rights, freedom of information, privacy, and copyright, while also taking an interest in information security. He's the director of Free Barrett Brown, a support network, nonprofit advocacy organization, and legal defense fund formed for the purpose of assisting the prominent internet activist and journalist Barrett Brown, founder of Project PM. He's one of the organizers tonight, and Kevin Gallagher.
Thank you, Sam. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for coming. And I want to thank the rest of the dedicated organizers who donated their time and resources, recruited their friends and contacts to bring this event together. And I want to express my gratitude to the speakers, some of whom recorded special messages because they were not able to be here. Finally, the artists, Shepard Fairey, Molly Crabapple, Glenn Friedman, Dave Navarro, who very generously donated works to benefit the prisoners. Of course, we're here to celebrate and support Barrett and Jeremy, a journalist and a source, in their service to the public. Tomorrow, Private First Class Bradley Manning is expected to be sentenced in his court-martial at Fort Meade. We are living in a historic moment. With crucial oversight coming from whistleblowers and a free press, when our institutions have failed us, and these same institutions have failed Barrett and Jeremy, two people whose cases are very different, but in many ways connected. I think that rather than locking these two up, they should be investigating the criminality that they helped reveal. Thanks. I've devoted the last year of my life to this cause, the cause of Barrett Brown and other activists imprisoned by our government. It goes without saying that this cause is an important one. You know it's important when even those who are not fans of Barrett Brown or Jeremy Hammond, who don't agree with their personalities or their politics for whatever reason, recognize that there is a great injustice being meted out in these cases. The case of Barrett Brown is one which will set standards with regards to the First Amendment. And as organizations like Electronic Frontier Foundation and Reporters Without Borders have observed, the case even threatens our right to post links online. It's significant not just for journalists who don't know whether it's safe to link to leaked, hacked, or stolen source materials anymore, but also to average internet users. I, along with some of Barrett's friends, created the Free Barrett Brown campaign almost immediately after he was arrested. As much of a fan of Barrett's writing and supporter of Project PM and an interested observer to WikiLeaks and Anonymous as I was, it's really the government's actions that have turned me into an activist. I often tell people that the reason we created this support network is because we've seen a pattern over the last few years. We saw this with the charges against Aaron Swartz and with the treatment of Bradley Manning. And if we're to hope for a more just society, then I think we need to take a hard look at that pattern. We need to consider prosecutorial overreach and encourage the exercise of prosecutorial discretion. We need to look at the practice of using secret grand juries to gather evidence. We need to think about the use of confidential informants. We need to examine the plea bargaining system. When you consider why it's acceptable for family members or supporters of a defendant to also be intimidated and targeted for investigation. I'm referring, of course, to the fact that the FBI agent in Barrett's case had threatened his mother with charges, which is one of the circumstances, along with his frustration over the seizure and non-return of his computing devices, that led to his arrest for posting a YouTube video. We see the state targeting of family members and associates just yesterday with the detainment of Glenn Greenwald's partner. I think those tactics are completely reprehensible. There's no more illusion that we can occupy the moral high ground when our government engages in practices that officially we complain about when it's done by other countries like Russia and China. As part of this whole process, I've got to know Barrett's mom, Karen, who's a wonderful person. I have no doubt of her absolute innocence. Nonetheless, the government was able to extract a guilty plea on obstruction charges for which he awaits sentencing, all because of some laptops. You might ask, what was on the laptops that the FBI was looking for in March of last year? Well, there were some video games, a book in progress, notes and conversations with sources, a copy of Stuxnet. The day that Barrett was first raided, March 6th, 2012, the The ringleader of WellSec, Sabu, was revealed to be an FBI informant. And on the previous day, Jeremy Hammond had been arrested in Chicago. This all happened in the wake of the Stratfor hack, but it seemed a long time coming. Bear was not involved in the hack on Stratfor. In fact, he had intense disagreements with hackers over the release of credit card information that could harm innocents. So why was he raided? To answer that question, I think you need to talk about Project PM. Project PM, as it was originally envisioned in 2009, was an effort to effect a change in the structure of the media by way of a splinter group. Barrett intended to gather experts from various fields in order to create a network of bloggers that would turn out a higher quality of research and reportage that would be more effective and competent than the traditional media. At outlets where he posted his work, such as Daily Kos and the Huffington Post, Barrett had observed the watering down of contributor quality and intended to correct this. Named for the Panther Moderns, a group out of the classic cyberpunk novel Neuromancer by William Gibson, Project PM hinged upon the potential for online collaboration. Long before his involvement in Anonymous, Barrett was a critic of the media and how establishment journalists are complicit in allowing abuses, indeed wars, to occur. It was the subject of his second book, Laying Into the American Media Punditry, which has never been released, but we have it, and we're working on releasing it. In any case, the reasons that Barrett attached himself to and affiliated himself with Anonymous, even if he later grew critical of it, were philosophical. Let's read him in his own words. 10 years ago, it would have been infeasible for tens of thousands of individuals with no physical connection or central leadership to conceive, announce, and implement a massive act of civil disobedience against a major Western power, crippling a portion of its online infrastructure in the process, and to do all of this in a matter of days and without anyone involved having to contend with the tear gas and horseback response with which states have traditionally been in the habit of contending with mass action. But such a thing as this is happening today, and having been done once will almost certainly be done again, repeatedly, increasingly, and with potentially significant consequences for the nation state and implications regarding that which will perhaps someday come to replace it. End quote. Unbeknownst to its members, Barrett had been following Anonymous and recognized its importance for some time, even if it wasn't until 2010 that he publicly came out as one of them. In online parlance, he's a classic moral fag, not about the lulls, but intent on harnessing the phenomenon as a force for good. He wrote within the same essay I just quoted, "Having taken a long interest in the subculture from which Anonymous is derived and the new communicative structures that make it possible, I am now certain that this phenomenon is among the most important and underreported social developments to have occurred in decades, and that the development question promises to threaten the institution of the nation-state and perhaps even someday replace it as the world's most fundamental and relevant method of human organization." End quote. You can see that what Anonymous was doing, challenging classical institutions of power, was both in his interests and also agreed with the goals of Project PM, which were at that time evolving to suit diverse ends. Project PM eventually turned into a crowdsourced research project or think tank, with a wiki that was devoted to investigating the world of private intelligence and cybersecurity contractors. The recent revelations from Edward Snowden only further underscore the importance of Brown's work on this growing industry and the potential threat it poses to democracy and privacy. Using leaked emails hacked out of H.B. Gary Federal and Stratfor beginning in 2011, he and others were able to identify the connections between companies and uncover a number of scandals in which things were being planned that are certainly against the public interest and potentially illegal. As he wrote this last July 1st in The Guardian about the cyberintelligence complex, "This is the world we accept if we continue to avert our eyes, and it promises to get much worse." So why in the United States of America is an investigative journalist facing charges that carry up to 105 years in sentencing? Could it be related to his inquiry into the shadowy state corporate alliance on surveillance? Are they seeking to make an example out of him and deter those who would follow his lead? I say it's all of the above. What is most concerning about Barrett's case is the disconnect between his conduct and the charged crime. The subheading of a profile about him in the latest issue of Rolling Stone reads, "No one can figure out what law he broke." The article includes a quote from Brown himself saying, "It's not even clear to me that I've committed a crime." There's no allegation that he sought to profit from the information or that he was involved in the compromise. Stratfor's client and subscriber lists are important because they show who pays to receive their intelligence and who they gather information on behalf of. Stratfor is also what connects this case to Jeremy Hammonds. Looking at the facts of the second indictment, all Barrett did was paste a link inside of a chat room. The idea that someone can be indicted for this is absurd. I must say, I've grown accustomed to absurd actions by this prosecution. Not only did they go after his mother, but this past April, they moved to seize $20,000 that my organization had raised with the help of Glenn Greenwald in an attempt to deny him private representation. They issued a subpoena to the Project PM website, which has had chilling effects on the research that group is doing into the security state. Prosecution just 2 weeks ago requested a media gag order that would silence Brown and his attorneys. The request for a gag again begs the question, why do they fear the scrutiny and publicity? Is it that they don't want to have to explain why a journalist has been indicted 3 times on 17 counts in the U.S.? When prosecutors need to resort to such tactics, something is clearly wrong with our justice system. But let's talk a little more about Barrett. He's an interesting and colorful character, to say the least. Barrett is an iconoclastic writer who, if you read his writing, is really quite hilarious and incisive. His writing is what I first came to him by and what I admire most. I also noted his trademark irreverence, arrogance, and rapid-fire wit. He was fiercely honest and uncompromising about his personal life, which is another thing I thought unusual. If you read the Rolling Stone article, you'll get a sense for why his life is interesting and why so many unfortunately dismissed him before he landed in jail. But I'd like to stress the fact that whoever Barrett Brown is doesn't change the fact that he's being unjustly persecuted. It doesn't diminish the importance of his work. Last year, many were content to dismiss the warnings about Trapwire and persona management. But now, after Snowden, and after the tragically deceased journalist Michael Hastings was shown to be taking interests in this case, people are listening. In some respects, Barrett is now regarded as a prophet of the surveillance dystopia, a person who knew what was going on before the rest of us did, someone who has been massively vindicated and redeemed. It's an abject shame that he doesn't have his freedom, because I think he could do a lot to educate us about the incestuous revolving door between the private intel firms and the government these days. Fortunately, after a long search, since May 1st, Barrett has been represented by some of the top lawyers in the country. His legal team, which we retained, includes Ahmed Gafoor and Charlie Swift, 2 lawyers who were involved in the quest for justice at Guantanamo Bay. Lieutenant Commander Swift is best known for his defense of Salim Hamdan, alleged to have been Osama bin Laden's driver, in the case Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, which resulted in his victory at the Supreme Court. Gafoor teaches at the University of Texas Law School and was formerly a staff attorney at the human rights organization Reprieve. Interestingly enough, Barrett's lawyer Ahmed is counsel on many of the cases where the NSA alleges to Congress to have thwarted terror attacks. I have the utmost confidence in Barrett's legal team. I think it's likely that he will be out of jail before long. However, there are a lot of expenses involved, which is why we're continuously campaigning and asking for public contributions to his legal defense. Barrett has pleaded not guilty, and his cases will go to trial early next year. There was a continuance granted today. With regard to Jeremy Hammond, I know that Barrett had great respect for the individuals who actually took the risks to get us this information so that we can make informed decisions as a public. In fact, he was quite torn up and emotional about the potential punishment faced by Jeremy. It's inspiring to see jailed activists like Jeremy and Barrett come to be regarded as heroes and political prisoners by people all over the world. And I commend all the efforts made by those who support him and those who have written about them. To close, I would just like to leave you with a short statement from Barrett to his supporters. And also, I'll play a clip of him in a recent documentary called Terms and Conditions May Apply. Here's a statement from Barrett. Over the last year, I've been humbled by the degree of support I've received from information activists across the globe. In particular, I'd like to thank Kevin Gallagher, Greg Hausch, and Lauren Pespisa for their continuing effort in raising funds and keeping the public informed about the case. But I also owe a debt of gratitude to everyone who has so much as posted a tweet about this matter. In doing so, you have turned this affair into a new opportunity to educate the nation about what the government and its corporate partners are doing behind closed doors and the risks this alliance presents to the public itself. To see this dangerous cyber-industrial complex being brought to the attention of more and more people is a source of great satisfaction for me, and I'm sure it is for Jeremy Hammond as well. It tells us that what we are undergoing is not in vain, and that is a gift beyond measure. Again, I thank all of you. Thank you. I'm just going to play a quick clip of Barrett right here.
Do you think privacy is dead?
I mean, it's certainly dying. Whether or not it for privacy privacy is going to remain dead unless there's a really fundamental shift in the dynamics by which that's decided. By which I mean the only real effective response is to monitor and to change the behavior, the tendencies of the intelligence industry and law enforcement and all that, and even companies, and that's very, very unlikely.
Next up, I'd like to invite up Michael Ratner. He is the president emeritus of the Center for Constitutional Rights, a nonprofit human rights litigation organization based in New York. He is the co-host of the radio show Law and Disorder. And as past president of the National Lawyers Guild, he has represented Guantanamo detainees in front of the United States Supreme Court and is currently the United States Attorney for WikiLeaks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sam. I really appreciate your being here, as I do all of us. You know, I've been in this room a few times. I want to thank first ThoughtWorks for having us. It's an incredible organization. It's been so supportive, really, of the struggles of people like Barrett Brown, Jeremy Hammond, and I should also say Aaron Swartz. Because the last time, perhaps, that I was in this room, we had a table up there, maybe November, December 2012, 2 months or so before Aaron killed himself. And I spoke there, and then right after I spoke, Aaron spoke. And so in some way, I feel like we're sitting in a room where we have Aaron's presence and we're in hallowed ground as we defend the others who I know Aaron would have wanted to see defended. And we all think sometimes that we have a lot of time. Oh, I'll do tomorrow what I'm putting off that I should do today. But Aaron Swartz's case tells us, first, it tells us that you don't have that kind of time. And secondly, it tells us that this government is unrelenting in the oppression and the oppression and the repression of internet activists who want to reveal the truth, who want to democratize the internet, and who want to reveal crimes of our own government and those around the world. So if you're going to act, if you're going to support Barrett Brown, Jeremy Hammond, and others, don't delay at all. This is about Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown, and I'll mention them as well as the others. I saw Jeremy Hammond yesterday. I visited him at MCC. And, you know, I sat there thinking, as I thought all along, what is Jeremy Hammond doing in this prison? Why isn't George Bush in here? Why isn't Cheney in here? Why isn't Condoleezza in here? Condoleezza Rice in here? Why aren't the people in here who tortured my clients and other clients at Guantanamo and around the world? Why do they think, oh, we have to send a message to soldiers not to reveal documents, like we want to send a message on the back of Bradley Manning by asking for 60 years? Why do we want to send that message for them, but we're not willing in this country to send the message that you don't torture only when maybe politicians get the message that you will go to jail if you torture? But that's not this country. So I sat there with Jeremy and I said, what the heck is he doing in here? And why are the people who call for his scalp or Barrett Brown's or Bradley Manning or Ed Snowden or Julian Assange or Weave, why aren't they saying, let's go after the real criminals in this country who've actually admitted to their criminality, to their torture? But they haven't done that. Jeremy Hammond, I was there the day he pled guilty in court. He pled guilty to one count that can get him 10 years in prison of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. And it was an amazing moment because he not only pled to that, but if you want to talk about a political person and what's been and a person who's been called the electronic Robin Hood, it's when he started talking, when he was the government, or he said what else he did. He went into or attempted to go into the Arizona Police Department or something like that because they were picking up undocumented workers. Then he went into FBI, some virtual website of the FBI, Virtual Academy. Then he went into another site that makes weapons for crowd control, military weapons. So we're talking about someone who went after the very instruments of repression in our society, and yet he is sitting in prison. And then after that moment, he writes a statement that said, and it has to move you to tears, I believe in what I did. Just think about that. He's facing 10 years, and he said, I believe in what I did. So we're here to say, and I think Margie Ratner-Kunstler, who's one of his attorneys, will say a word of how you can support Jeremy Hammond. He needs the support, and he has to get it. And then Barrett Brown. You know, we've heard about Barrett Brown from Kevin and from others. You know, first off, I want to say again and again, he's a journalist. Let's understand that. Barrett Brown is a journalist who is in prison for carrying out acts of journalism. And when you think about the dividing line that there was at least for a while in this country between whistleblowers and journalists, that line is being closed like this by the Obama administration. I happen to think neither truth tellers as whistleblowers should be prosecuted, nor should journalists. But to the extent the government felt it could prosecute truth tellers and whistleblowers, they are now going after journalists. Barrett's one of them. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are another. And then you even look at people like James Rosen at Fox News, who had his records subpoenaed because they wanted to find out his source for a story. And in the search warrant, what they said is he is a co-conspirator with his source, a co-conspirator to commit espionage. This is a journalist. Again, closing any line between a source and a journalist. Likewise, James Risen, who has refused to testify about his source in a current trial that's going on. The Court of Appeals orders James Risen to testify. And what do they say? They say that the source could not have committed this crime without the journalist. They're essentially co-conspirators in the crime. And so what you see them doing with Barrett Brown, with Julian Assange, is looking for the people who won't have the public sympathy as they knock off journalists who are reporting on the misdeeds, crimes, hypocrisy, and criminality of our government. And what I can't understand, of course, is people at Fox News initially about Julian or Barrett or others would have never supported them in the world. But now you see what's happening. Their own journalists are beginning to be subjected to government repression. So it's a time when I would want every single mainstream journalist to stand up for Barrett Brown, Julian Assange, and WikiLeaks. The other thing about Barrett that, of course, was important for all of us involved with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks is early on, from the H.B. Gary documents, Barrett Brown crowdsourced those documents. And what came out of that was the fact that this private company, H.B. Gary, was actually looking at how to destroy both WikiLeaks and Glenn Greenwald. So don't think that what happened yesterday at the airport in London to Glenn Greenwald's partner, David Miranda, is unusual. It has a long history, starting from way back with private intelligence going forward till today. And when you think about Barrett Brown, and I think this came out of some of the work that I've read of his and others, is that some 70% of the intelligence gathering in this country and around the world is done by private corporations who are in there and making billions and billions and billions of dollars. That's Julian, that's Barrett Brown, and that's Jeremy Hammond. And then when we think about Aaron Swartz, we also understand that we have to support others as well. We have to support Bradley Manning. I would have not been here today had they sentenced him tomorrow morning, but it looks like he may not be sentenced till tomorrow afternoon. But think about it. They asked for 60 years against Bradley Manning for revealing truths that we need to function as a democracy, whether it's the torture camp set up in Iraq by our own government, whether it's the collateral murder video that Brigida worked on, whether it's the Afghan war logs that indicated the amount of people killed in massacres, or the diplomatic cables that the Tunisian government itself said were one of the springboards, of the Arab Spring, the importance of what Bradley Manning did. And you have to ask yourself who, again, should be on trial. Should it be Bradley Manning, or it should be the people who brought us into that completely unauthorized and illegal Iraq war and then carried out massive human rights violations in doing it? Or should Julian Assange be having to sit in the Ecuador embassy? Because if he gets out of that embassy, he will be taken to this country where he will likely face life in prison, much like Edward Snowden will if the U.S. ever gets its hands on him. And I know there's people here who represent or are involved with Weave, and of course we understand how outrageous his case is. The fact that he's in prison for showing a security hole to AT&T, I find completely and utterly extraordinary. My view is that these truth tellers, these journalists are the real heroes of today. In some way, what they've revealed makes the book 1984 look completely tame. I mean, it's a much more massive surveillance state than I would have ever expected, and I'm skeptical and been doing this my whole life. But it's much worse than I expected. And if we're asking anybody who should be on trial, it's certainly not the people we've mentioned. And you can see how, you know, someone asked me, one of the journalists today asked me, Michael, who do you think is winning here? I don't know if that's the right question, but I can tell you this. The government is not winning at this point. And you can see it by the drasticness of their actions. The fact that they had to detain Glenn Greenwald's partner. The fact that they had to force down a Bolivian presidential jet. What does that tell you about the desperation, the utter desperation of this country and of the whole worldwide system of surveillance? The fact that I was telling Sam today, we were just chatting about this fact, that there's an extraordinary article in The Guardian today how the GCHQ, which is British intelligence, went into The Guardian's office, got a hold of two of their hard drives that they thought might have the Snowden documents on them, and apparently sledgehammered them to their last bits. While The Guardian is telling them, what are you guys doing? They're all sitting in Rio or in Germany or somewhere else. But that's the extent to which the government is going in its repression. And of course, it's putting up against the wall what I have to call the Cassandras of our time, the Barrett Browns, the Jeremy Hammonds, the Julian Assange, the Ed Snowdens, the Bradley Manning. And it's our job to make sure that their messages and their truth-telling get out to all of us. I want to end by just saying we're in, as I think Sam started off, an amazing moment in the national security state and what's going on. But in fact, we're in a deep struggle now with that state, and one in which it's not clear who's winning. In some way, I use the word, it's a Manichean fight between the forces of darkness and the forces of light. Barrett Brown, Jeremy Hammond, and the others represent the forces of light. And our job as activists of any sort is to stand with the forces of light. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a brief 10-minute break, give you an opportunity to sign up for the auction, bid on some of the artwork that we have in the back there. When we come back, we will have a statement from Jeremy Hammond. Everybody could just take a seat. Just want to remind you there is a mailing list at the front desk. I guess directly that direction on the other side of that wall. If you want to stay in touch and keep informed, please put your name on that list. I'd like to get started again with Bria Grace. She's an activist with Jeremy's support committee and I believe has a statement from Jeremy now.
Hi, my name is Grace. I, like I said, am an activist, but I'm also a friend of Jeremy's. I've been a friend of his for years, so it's pretty special for me to be here tonight, and I'm very, very honored to be reading this from him, so get right down to it. Rebel greeting. I hope this evening finds you all in the best of health and the highest of spirit. Thanks for coming out to show support for me and Barrett Brown. I want to shout out to all my brothers and sisters locked down here at New York Metropolitan Correctional Center, at Brooklyn MDC, at Rikers Island, in the Tombs at Cook County Jail in Chicago, and to all those on hunger strikes in California prisons and Guantanamo Bay, and to Bradley Manning, Barrett Brown, Julian Assange, the Tinley Park Five, the NATO Five, Jerry Koch, and my wonderful twin brother, Jason. Also, thanks to the folks who put this evening together, who have attended my court dates, who have written letters and sent books, and who went to the noise demonstrations outside the jail. Your acts of solidarity bring us all great encouragement, inspiration, and strength during these harsh times. Comrades, we are up against a racist, capitalist power structure that wages wars, destroys the environment, and spies on our every move. They lock up millions of people in cages for crimes that corrupt governments and multinational corporations also commit on an everyday basis and on a greater magnitude, yet we are the criminals. They lock us up for guns and drugs when defense contractors and pharmaceutical companies are the top traffickers. They call us thieves when it's Wall Street one percenters who rob us blind, exploit our labor, evict us out of our homes, and get billion-dollar bailouts. They condemn hackers and leakers when the NSA, CIA, and FBI illegally spy on everybody and wage cyber espionage through viruses and hacking for foreign government systems. They put signs everywhere that say, if you see something, say something. As if their extensive surveillance camera systems aren't. They want us to become additional eyes and ears for the police against our own neighbors. But if you point out suspicious activities of our own government, if you leak information that should be free and public anyway, then they will follow you to the ends of the earth to put you in prison. Even if you simply report on these leaks, they will discredit you, subpoena you for sources, or just put you in prison on a bunch of trumped-up charges, just like they did Barrett Brown. They repress us, infiltrate us, entrap us, harass our families and friends, and call us criminals, terrorists, and traitors, and break their own laws to try and stop us because we work to expose the truth. They are scared that if people know the truth, the day will come when they will have to answer for their own crimes. But can we trust whatever independent review panel they put together to investigate the NSA? After all the lies and egregious illegality, do you think any of them will be charged or do time? Will we ever be satisfied with any reforms they promise? The answer is obviously no. Justice can never be found in their courtrooms. Yes, we need to eliminate mandatory minimum sentences, but Attorney General Eric Holder doesn't give a damn about prison overcrowding. The Obama administration is not interested in any such debate about the balance of privacy and security because they will keep spying on everyone, regardless of public opinion, until we stop them. The time for talk is over. It is time for collective refusal, civil disobedience, and direct action. We must... We must support all of those who risked their freedom and lives to expose and confront the power structure and continue the struggle until we stop these wars and the prison walls come crumbling down and we can all be together again, free and equal. Yours for the revolution, Jeremy Hammond. I also just want to add really quickly, one of the things that we're doing that would really help Jeremy right now is we're collecting letters of support to ask Judge Loretta Preska for leniency in his sentencing. If you go to freejeremy.net, real easy, freejeremy.net, you'll see a big banner that says, "Join us in asking Judge Preska for leniency." If you click that, that will take you to instructions on how to write a letter. Deadlines for those letters are October 15th, is that correct? October 15th. You don't have to know him to write a letter, you just have to care. That's it. Jeremy, my friend, someone who played soccer with my 2-year-old son, who snuck him brownie bites when I wasn't looking, is facing 10 years in jail. He was punished for a minor infraction, 2 years without seeing, no visits from friends, 1 year, no visits from family. This is beyond a war. This is beyond a war. Even if you don't know him, you know what it means to be human, what it means to miss your friends and your family. So I really do urge you, please, freejeremy.net, write those letters. Jeremy deserves to be home. He deserves to be with the people that love him and care about him. Barrett Brown does too. So thank you.
Next up, Margaret Kuntzler. She is a longtime civil rights litigator, political activist, and part of the Jeremy Hammond legal team.
Hi, thank you all for coming. I was with Jeremy today and last night, and he's very pleased that you're all here and that he's linked with Barrett, who he respects immensely. And is very pleased to be on a bill with Barrett. He feels that Barrett really deserves all of our support, and he has his total support. One of the things I just want to mention here, I'm going to be very brief, is that Jeremy's isolation is complete, and it is a great honor that I get to see him and that his lawyers get to see him, but he doesn't get social visits, so it's very important that everybody write to him. He's isolated, and it's a terrible experience that he's going through. So it's important that not only that we write letters to try to get him out of jail, but that we write to the court, but that we write to Jeremy as well. He needs to get books. Jeremy does have a few people on his phone list, and that is his total contact with the outside world. And so it's a wonderful thing that he's calling us here tonight, because this is, I'm sure his heart is bursting with happiness at this experience. Yes. And you can... He reads constantly. His favorite books are autobiographies of great political leaders. That's his favorite thing to read, and that's what he should get. I just want to say that, you know, all of the things that are happening to quash the whistleblowers and to put Jeremy into jail for an outrageous amount of time, and things that are happening to Barry Brown, are the desperate acts of a government, and we can't take that as our defeat. Because look, it's a changing world. Individuals, like these great heroes, can make changes and can threaten the world to such, threaten the government of the United States to such an extent that they respond in this way. So all we have to do is support these people, and the world can possibly change. And I ask you all to write letters to the court and to support Jeremy, and to support Jeremy beyond this time. And when he goes to jail, do not forget him. Support him until the day he gets out of jail. And that's what you can do for Jeremy. Thank you very much.
I'd like to bring up Stanley Cohen, a political activist and criminal defense attorney, longtime people's lawyer, beloved by many for his uncompromising willingness to provide legal defense for the unpopular. Cohen represented Mercedes Hafer, one of the 14 activists affiliated with Anonymous who were prosecuted by the U.S. government for allegedly participating in a December 2010 digital sit-in on PayPal's website in response to PayPal's decision to block donations to WikiLeaks.
Thank you. I think the first thing Mercedes would have me say to you is it's not allegedly. She did. I spend a lot of time speaking all over the world, and typically what I do when I speak to groups, whether it's in New York City or in Palestine or in Egypt before I got banned, or in Israel before I got banned, or in Syria before I'm not sure which side is winning, I give my salam aleikums to everyone in the audience. Especially I give my greetings to the snitches, the FBI, the CIA, the LSD, and everyone else here. I don't really give a fuck about what you report. I really don't, because I'm closer to the end than the beginning, and, you know, you eat shit and die. But just please make sure you tell the truth, because the truth will set you fucking free, FBI. And I won't call the president by his name, and for those of you who follow me or know me, I call him I Have a Drone. So just tell the fucking truth, and life will be okay. Now, over the last month, I've been thinking about what can I possibly say in front of such a wonderful collective of renowned activists and lawyers and speakers and folks that have put their ass on the line. And I really had no idea until about 3 weeks ago. And it really began to take shape, and it has taken shape the last 2 days, about ultimately what Jeremy, what Barrett, what Bradley, what Mr. Snowden, what Mr. Assange, and what PayPal 14 is about is Egypt. It's about Egypt. Think about it. Right now, in Egypt, whether you are Muslim, Jewish, Coptic, Christian, French, an atheist, or a son of a bitch, there is a government that is slaughtering people by the thousands. And it began because people elected to say no. They elected to speak out. They elected to fight back. They elected to take barricades. They elected to stand up to guns and to fucking cops and to spying. And they stood up and they're being slaughtered in the streets. Now, what the fuck, people say, does that have to do with our clients and our friends and our community? Well, it's because it's one world. It's because we all stand up and fight our fight in different ways, in different places, in different times. And it is about freedom, it is about truth, it is about honesty, it is about integrity, and it's about telling I Have a Drone and every other fucking petty despot in the world, fuck you. You don't own our lives, you don't own our thoughts, you don't own what we say, you don't know where we go. We put you in and we can take your fucking asses out. Every one of you. And that's why they are so frightened by the so-called hacktivists, or the whistleblowers, or the truth speakers. That's why they are so all fucked up over those people who say, yeah, I'll go to prison. Okay, but I'm going to out you fuckers. I'm not going to let you to keep the pearly wisdom to yourself because we don't trust you. We do not believe you. We do not listen to you. We do not follow you. There's an old saying I learned in law school 137 years ago. In the marketplace of discourse, the truth will always rise. There is no such thing as protected speech. There is no such thing as hate speech. There is no such thing as suppressed speech. Speech is speech. You let it come out. You let people make their decisions. If they don't fucking like it, they can turn off Fox. They can turn off CBS. They can shut down and stop listening to Cohen and walk out the door. It's speech. Now, it's easy for me to say here tonight that it's just speech. I'm not facing 10 years, only I think 5 years, whatever the hell it is, the most recent count. But there are women, there are men, there are people among us that have crossed the line and said, we will make a stand, we will fight back, we will take the risks, because it's all about truth. And that's what tonight's event is about. It's about Jeremy. It's about Barrett. It's about Bradley Manning. It's about Mr. Assange. It's about Mr. Snowden. It's about the PayPal 14. Women and men who came, there was a point, there was a time where there's that little voice in the back of your mind, the back of your head, that says, do I really want to fucking do this? I mean, do I really want to be reckless? Because I know they're going to catch me. They're going to catch me. They're going to catch me. They're going to grab me. It may take a week. It may take a month. It may take a year, because their industry of snitches and cooperators, and brutality, and persecution, and Eric Holder, and all the rest of the fucking kiss-my-ass petty politicians in this country, they will come for us, every person. You got to know it going in. You know it going out. And when you stand in front of a federal judge or a traffic court judge, it's the same tired shit. But in the back of everyone's mind is that little voice that says, And we're here to honor those people here tonight who, when they heard the voice, said, I'm talking to you, I got to go to work. And that's what it's about. It is about refusing to go silently unto the night. It is about refusing to bow down to the industry of silence. It is about refusing to nod your head as others tell you not just how to live your life, but how an entire society, indeed a world, should function. And on behalf of Barrett, on behalf of Jeremy, on behalf of Mercedes, and Mr. Assange, and Mr. Snowden, and Bradley Manning tomorrow, we have a very simple two-word answer. Fuck you. Thank you very much.
Jay Lederman is a California-based lawyer who has been called the hacktivist advocate for his work defending those accused of computer crimes. He's co-authored the first ever book on the legal defense of medical marijuana crimes and is a frequent commentator in print, radio, TV, and film speaking about his cases. Jay Lederman.
Something, so I'm not going to be as animated, but I wanted to say before I started, this night came together by a lot of hard work, by a lot of awesome people, one of which was a guy named Jason Flores Williams, who helped found the Whistleblower Defense League, of which I'm a part, and recently Jason has taken ill, he's in the hospital, and I think he's watching this via live stream, so we want to say get well, Jason. We love you, brother. And next time we'll see you here. Okay. Now for something a little more serious. We live in times where our liberties are threatened, where individual is presumed to yield to the state. And I'm looking to history to see where we are now. And I'm seeing that things that should not have ever been forgotten have, perhaps until recently, seemingly been lost to history. Things that should be said and known every day as we Americans decide how we allow ourselves to be governed, are no longer spoken except by what has become an outlawed few. Our privacy, the very gift that gives our spirit of independence, has become threatened. Out of the shadows, there's what I've seen to be a little bit of hope for us all. There's a legion gathering. There's a legion arriving. A legion the United States government should have expected. Where the masses have forgotten, a new breed of patriot, the hacktivist, remembers. Words that have, over the years, lost their meaning have gained meaning anew. There's a war on information, but that is not a war the government will win. The people will prevail. The people must prevail. I want to read you something. I want you to pay attention to these words. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier, the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. We know how to put a proper price on goods. And it would be strange indeed if so celestial an item as freedom would not be highly rated. That was, of course, Thomas Paine from The American Crisis in the winter of 1776. And it is as relevant today as it was at Valley Forge. It shouldn't be, but it is. So let us not forget the principles upon which this country was born. As we look to our seemingly forgotten past, we must embrace a future of fantastic promise that is brought to us by this digital revolution. The digital revolution is our future. The world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has before. One person with the courage to come forward can change the world in ways that one person can never change the world before. And we're seeing that, and we're believing that, and we're feeling that, and it's wonderful. But we need to know where we're coming from to see where we're going. So I look at what it was, and what was it? It was money, power, right? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But these things have become passé. Information is the new currency. Information, the new aphrodisiac. Information, the new high. He who controls the information controls your world. And your government knows it. But we're starting to know it too, thanks at least in part to the groundbreaking work of Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown, two of the first prophets of the digital age. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of liberty. Thomas Jefferson said that. But our government would likely seek to classify our founding fathers as terrorists if they dared seek to turn their rhetoric to reality today. How far we've drifted from the American ideals. What dangerous times are these? Likewise, predictably lurking about, Jeremy and Barrett, are prosecutors and judges who want to turn these prophets into martyrs. Our aim is to see that they fail miserably in these endeavors.
Woo!
At issue in the cases of both Hammond and Brown is the principle that people are entitled to privacy while the state must be transparent. Syllogistically, a good result in the United States v. Hammond and a good result in the United States v. Brown translates into a good result for freedom, freedom for us all. At the same time, we must also recognize that what's good for freedom is antithetical to the emerging surveillance state. Jeremy's accused of hacking Strategic Forecasting Incorporated, commonly known as Stratfor. Stratfor was thought of as a sort of private CIA. He admitted to passing over 5 million emails to WikiLeaks for a publication. He pled guilty and faces a possible 10 years in federal prison. Those emails gave us a glimpse into the evil and inappropriate relationship between the government and the private spy network, the so-called private intelligence community. Among the disclosures of the Stratfor emails, among the things that were shed light upon by these disclosures, was something called Trapwire. It's a facial recognition software program already in place in major American cities that can track you from your house to the store to the bank to wherever you're going and whatever you're doing. It tracks your daily routine. Trapwire was one of the many items that journalist Barrett Brown was investigating at the time of his arrest. Barrett pens trial on charges that could add up to over 100 years of custody time. Principal among the charges he faces are allegations that he shared a link to the Stratfor hack, wherein there were some credit card numbers. Assuming arguendo he did so, he shared a link to a newsworthy event. He did something journalists do every day, all day long. But because of his investigations into these private intelligence firms, including Booz Allen Hamilton, the company in the news now because they were the NSA contractor who employed NSA whistleblower, Edward Snowden, Barrett was charged and he stands to lose his freedom for all of his days. He's 32 now. And they could give him 100 years. It's fucking obscene. Let me read some Jefferson once more to buttress the historic importance of these acts. Rightful liberty is unobstructed action according to our will within limits drawn around us by the equal rights of others. I do not add within the limits of the law because law is often the tyrant's will and always so when it violates the rights of the individual. Indeed, Jefferson would be in lockup today, perhaps sharing his cell with Jeremy or Barrett. What dangerous times are these indeed, when personal liberty is constantly under threat of incarceration. Jeremy and Barrett acted not for fame nor for financial gain. They didn't think that one day we would gather together like this to support them, to support their actions, and to help them. They did what they did because of their unyielding principles, because of their personal convictions. Because they understood that freedom, liberty, and independence come from the simple concept that privacy for the individual and transparency for the state is paramount. Based upon that, they have acted heroically. They remembered the American ideals that were lost to time. They remembered their past as they forged ahead to make a better future for us all. These are indeed the times that try men's souls, but if we follow the lead set by Jeremy and set by Barrett, I've no doubt that it will be an American people that have a glorious triumph over the American government and the corporatocracy's private surveillance state. Donating to the causes of Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown is important for these foregoing reasons. We ask you to stand up for freedom, to stand against the surveillance state, to stand for the true ideals of the American experiment, and to help us protect and to fight for these prophets of the digital age. Jeremy and Barrett put themselves on the line for your freedom. Please help secure theirs. We do not forgive the transgressions of the surveillance state. We do not forget our heroes. Thank you.
Nearing the end of our program, but I'd like to bring up now Tor Eklund. He is the lead trial, or was lead trial counsel for Andrew Ironheimer, or Weave, in his prosecution under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act for downloading roughly 120,000 iPad subscriber email addresses from AT&T's publicly accessible server. He's currently lead counsel in Mr. Ironheimer's appeal to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in what is one of the most important CFAA cases of recent years. Tor is also trial co-counsel, along with Jay Lederman, for indicted former Reuters social media editor Matthew Keyes in his prosecution for CFAA violations. Before becoming a lawyer, Tor was a producer and production manager of independent film and off-Broadway theater. Tor?
Hi, just for the record, Tor is my real given name. I was at trial in Weave's case, and I told that to an FBI agent, and he said he thought that I was fucking with him, that I'd changed my name for the trial. I'm going to be real brief, but I'm going to talk about the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is the primary legal weapon that the government uses on their war on the free flow of information on the Internet. The Computer Fraud and Abuse Act is the through line that you'll see in all of these prosecutions. There's a Computer Fraud and Abuse Act count in Jeremy's case. Barrett doesn't have a CFAA count, but he's got a 18 U.S.C. 1029 count, which involves this concept of unauthorized access to an access device. You see a CFAA count in Bradley Manning's case. You see it in Wee's case. You see it in Matthew Key's case. You will undoubtedly see it if Snowden is brought back to the United States. You will see a CFAA count. So what is the CFAA? CFAA is a statute that originated in 1984, appropriately. I think somebody was referencing Orwell before. And what happens in 1984 is you see the first big sort of public reaction to hacking. It's the year that War Games, the movie, came out. I don't know if you've seen that. Matthew Broderick's character hacks into NORAD and almost starts World War III. There were a number of prominent hacks in the country at that time. I think the 414s were on the front of Newsweek and whatnot. So this hysteria starts about the hackers. And this, I think this hysteria still carries to this day. I think hackers are like the new communists for the DOJ. They don't really know what to do with them. They don't understand what's going on. So the statute gets written in 1984, and it gets amended several times. And essentially what it does is it prohibits unauthorized access to a protected computer. What's a protected computer? It's anything with a frickin' microchip. All these cameras in this room are protected computers. Everybody's got a protected computer in their pocket. The definition is incredibly expansive. You're never, ever going to win a CFAA case arguing that something isn't a protected computer. As for unauthorized access to protect a computer, well, the beauty of the statute and why it's such a powerful tool for the government in these prosecutions is that it doesn't define it anymore, right? So you've got a statute written by people who don't know anything about computers, being interpreted by judges who really don't know anything about computers, having a key central term, unauthorized access, that nobody knows what the fuck it means. And the courts are all over the place. They are all over the place in this country. They don't know how to deal with it. So you see these three primary interpretations of unauthorized access. One is you violated the terms of service agreement, you know, for this website, or your employee agreement, or whatever. Well, what's the problem with that interpretation is it criminalizes behavior that millions and millions of people engage in every day. People lie on dating websites. They lie on their Facebook profile. Everybody in this room has probably violated the terms of service agreement about, I don't know, a dozen times at least, right? I do it fucking every day. Well, you're probably a felon under the CFAA, which incidentally, normally unauthorized access under the CFAA is just a misdemeanor count. But if your CFAA violation is in furtherance of either state law, U.S. Constitution, statute, or tort, interestingly enough, well, then you're a felon. Well, what's the problem with that is every state in the union has their own version of an unauthorized access statute, so anytime you violate the CFAA, you're going to be violating a state count, and bang, instant felony. Another problem with the CFAA, and I really had, I was trying to think of other criminal statutes today that are like this, is the main thing it criminalizes is unauthorized access to protect a computer and obtaining information, right? Well, what's the definition of obtaining information under the CFAA? It's just looking at something. So you essentially have a statute that criminalizes just looking at information. And I can't think of anything really in the common law or any kind of other statutory schemes that does that. I think that's really, really dangerous and leads to all sorts of fucked up shit. The second theory that they have about unauthorized access, which is essentially the theory that the government won on at trial in Weave's case, is, well, we know it when we see it, and it's unauthorized because we say so. And you don't have to have any kind of notice. You don't have to have any kind of warning. You don't even have to be thinking that what you're doing is unauthorized access under this theory. If the website owner or the government or AT&T or your mom or the friend who hates you or whatever decides that you know, your access is unauthorized, well, you've just committed a felony. That's extremely problematic because that arguably criminalizes normal internet behavior that millions of people engage in every day. Everybody clicks on links, you know, and all of a sudden you'd be clicking on a link, the website owner decides you don't belong there, bang, you're a felon. I also think it actually criminalizes what Google does by, you know, crawling the net, you know, with its bots and all sorts of things. And interestingly, it criminalizes a lot of what the NSA and the FBI does, but they don't get prosecuted for what they do. Another interesting thing about the CFAA, I'm a little tangent here, is you will not see one single corporate CFAA prosecution. All the criminal CFAA prosecutions are against individuals, which is very interesting because, to me at least, because the CFAA is one of those statutes that's both criminal and civil. I see tons of civil CFAA cases between corporations every day, but you won't see a single corporate prosecution. So what can you do to this definition of unauthorized access to sort of limit it and get it under control? I mean, I think the statute should just be taken out back and shot. But in lieu of that, we're arguing on appeal in Weave's case and in Aaron's Law, which is the amendments to the CFAA that Representative Lofgren is proposing in the House. I don't know really where that's going right now. They're saying that basically unauthorized access needs to mean bypassing a code-based restriction, like a password, you know, because a password is sort of like a black letter line, clear line, where you know if you're violating the CFAA, if you're trying to hack a password. So I'm not going to say that much more about the CFAA because I'm not going to bore you here with this really long legal lecture. You can come after this and talk to me if you want to ask really highly technical questions about it. Or you can download it from the internet and read all 10 lovely mind-glazing pages of it. But if you want to do anything to like change the CFAA, get involved with Aaron's Law, just Google Aaron's Law. You know, contact people in Congress and just say that this law has just got to be changed. Thank you very much.
I'd like to bring up our final speaker for tonight, Greg Hausch. He's an activist with Anonymous. That's what I have.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Yes. As you can tell by knowing my name, I'm not. And again, just like Jay and everyone else, I have to follow Stanley, which is never a good idea. But I want to talk about an event, and it wasn't something I'd planned on. They asked me to talk today, so here I am with nothing written down. And this is based on something that Stanley said. You know, the humanizing factors of people like Barrett and Jeremy. I was last in New York with Barrett at the same time, about 2 years ago, with Michael Hastings as well. We were out at dinner, and the conversation turned to their actions, what they were doing, who they were working on, the stories they were writing, and it very quickly turned to me and Michael having an argument with Barrett about crossing that line, and about how far across the line he was willing to go before they showed up, and him arguing that the line really didn't exist for him, and he didn't care, and he was going to keep doing what he wanted to do, no matter if they were showing up or not. And it was an interesting conversation because Michael spent a lot of the time talking to him about the fact that the line is really there, that they are going to come for you. And after an hour of just talking it over, we came to the conclusion that nothing you said to Barrett was going to change his mind or slow him down, which is where we wanted him to be. It's just, you know, it was amazing to see that he did not care that they were coming for him, that he was going to say what needed to be said. And it quickly turned, in the span of 10 seconds, when Barrett saw a pause in the conversation, to us talking to Michael about all the fun things that he was doing, and Barrett explaining to Michael that he wasn't going to go to prison, that he was going to be killed. And it's a very strange, you know, evening being back in New York again after that, with both of those things being true, that they came for Barrett and that Michael is dead. And I just want to say that no matter what we do, we have to remember that people like that are out there, that they're fighting, and that they just don't care that the government's coming for them, that they are going to keep doing this. And when they end up in these situations, these are the people we have to support. These are the people putting their asses on the line. They're the ones that we have to care about, and we have to support after the government is just throwing the book at them. I mean, look at these two. Look at these two. How can you not support these two? This picture was given to us by his mom, actually, and she asked us to use this one, and I think it's wonderful, and I just think that, you know, all of you showing up here tonight is a wonderful thing, and I really want to thank everyone that's shown up, everyone that talked, Stanley for cursing us all out, it was great, and I also wanted to add to this at the very end that we still have the auction items back there. When I'm done talking, we'll be closing it in about 10 to 15 minutes afterward. And the Molly Crabapple artwork that's back there, we have prints of for $20. So if you don't plan on winning the auction for it, you can still get prints of them back there. Other than that, I just want to thank everyone for everything they've already donated tonight. Make sure that anyone watching the live stream joins in. Thanks, everyone.
That's our program for tonight. Again, the auction will be open for another 10 minutes. So please sign up, and the posters are right over there as well. Thanks again for coming tonight, and it'll be available online.
Thank you, everyone. Please visit freejeremy.net, freebarrettbrown.org. And thank you to Sam Cedar from Majority Report for agreeing to do this.
Okay, we're going to play a series of video messages. The first one is going to be from Gabriella Coleman. She is the Wolf Chair in Scientific and Technological Literacy, Art History and Communication Studies Department at McGill University. She's trained as an anthropologist. She researches, writes, and teaches on hackers and digital activism. Her first book on free software, Coding Freedom, The Aesthetics and Ethics of Hacking, has been published with Princeton University Press. She's currently working on a new book on anonymous and digital media and has given numerous talks on hackers, digital activism, open source production, and intellectual property law.
Without further ado.
So greetings from Montreal. If the computer shakes a little bit, it's just because I'm using my knee to support it. So I just want to say a few comments. Foremost, it's so important to support Jeremy Hammond, Barrett Brown, who have really been in jail for way too long, and the support makes a huge difference. Also want to mention a few words about Barrett Brown's case in particular. Along with the case of Aaron Schwartz, where he was facing potentially years in jail and a huge fine for downloading articles, I believe that the Aaron case, the Aaron Schwartz case, and the Barrett Brown case are two of the most disturbing criminal cases I've ever come across. Aaron maybe broke some rules, but his case never deserved to be channeled into the criminal court system. And the criminalization of linking on Twitter, as is happening with Barrett, is also quite disturbing. These are also interesting times. There's been a kind of cosmic alignment. Everything has come together in some ways with recent revelations of provided by Edward Snowden. It confirms what activists like Barrett Brown, like Jeremy Hammond, like activists part of Project PM and activists part of Anonymous and so many more have been saying, that government and corporate surveillance has gone too far. And it seems like people are listening now. They're debating. Their minds are open. So it's so important to capitalize when we can, which is now, and move forward in this fight and also drum up all the support we can for Barrett and for Jeremy, because it really makes a difference. And so to end, just thanks and for being here tonight, and thanks to the organizers of the Free Jeremy campaign and the Free Barrett campaign. You guys and gals have done an extraordinary job.
Next up, we'll hear from Alexa O'Brien. She's an activist and journalist. Her tireless coverage and transcription of the court-martial of Bradley Manning have made her an invaluable resource for the mainstream media and has helped shine a light on the landmark proceedings. She was awarded a generous grant by the Freedom of Press Foundation for her work covering Bradley Manning's trial. Her work was also shortlisted for the 2013 Martha Gellhorn Prize for Journalism.
So, O'Brien, and I'm not with you this evening because I've been covering the Bradley Manning trial for about 3 years, and his sentence is expected on Tuesday the 19th or Wednesday the 20th, and I couldn't get away from Fort Meade. But if that weren't happening, I would be there in that room with you, because the cases of Jeremy Hammond and Barrett Brown are very important political cases. Here we have Jeremy Hammond, responsible for the Stratford leak. Some of you may not know that emails between Thomas Kopecky and Fred Burton, who was the vice president of counterterrorism at Stratford, were part of the court record for the Hedges v. Obama suit against indefinite detention. In fact, they were part of Judge Forrest's ruling in the Southern District of New York, granting a permanent injunction against the indefinite detention clause of the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows for the indefinite detention of anyone, anywhere in the world, no trial, no charges, sorry. The Forrest decision was overturned in the Second Circuit recently, and I've been informed by my counsel that we are going to apply to the Supreme Court later this month. Jeremy Hammond is a political prisoner. When you look at top secret America in the post 9/11 world, there is no boundary between the corporate intelligence companies that make up our national security state and government. And they essentially have led to a lack of oversight, have led to policies based on the economic interests of bureaucrats and politicians who are transferred between sectors, between the private sector and government positions. And one need only look at James Clapper, the director of the National Office of the National, the director of the National, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Sorry, I'm tired. Jeremy Hammond's acts are political acts and are certainly have revealed many, many causes and interests for people across the globe. I mean, one of the important things about these leaks of large data sets is that they are a benefit to people in many different sectors of society. the targeting of activists like myself, or in the case of the campaign finance reform group that I founded, trying to tie me and the group to Al-Qaeda, and also Bhopal activists in India, and there are other revelations. I also, the case of Bear Brown, I mean, here you have a journalist and commentator who was researching and reporting the activities of private security contractors. His case is completely bizarre, as has been written about, accused of a link, and certainly also other extenuating circumstances related to the video that he released on YouTube, all of which need to be covered by journalists. And I'm going to stop now because I'm sure you all want to continue on with your evening's activities. But what I want to just stress is that a journalist, somebody, has got to take each of these cases under their workload and cover them day in and day out. The cases deserve that. In many cases, both individuals have sacrificed greatly to better inform the public, and so it is upon our shoulders to make sure that their cases do not slip into obscurity or slip into merely cheerleading. We have to show what the government is doing, how it's doing it, who is doing it. It's the only way to push back against what's happening in both cases. So thank you for listening to me. I hope you have a great evening, and I will talk to you soon.
A last video this evening is from Brigida John's daughter. She is a poet and politician, or poetician. She's a member of the Icelandic Parliament for the Pirate Party and chairperson of the International Modern Media Institution. As an activist, she's noted for collaborating with WikiLeaks on the release of the collateral murder video.
Greetings. Listen, activists of the world, your actions are mighty. Your vision is clear as you rip through the fabric of the illusion of secrecy, privacy. Fight with a keyboard. Share your collective knowledge. The world is not simple. It is not even one. It is in layers of understanding. Peel the onion, encryption, communications. We are the revolutionaries of the information revolution. The R is for the public's evolution from oppression to empowerment through knowledge. Hi. My name is Birgitta Jónsdóttir, and I am a member of the Icelandic Parliament, a politician and a activist within the belly of the beast. I am here tonight, I'm very thankful to being here tonight, to express my support to Barrett Brown and Jeremy Hammond. I am certain that you are completely and fully aware of their story, so I'm not going to go into detail about why they are in prison. Even if those stories are quite interesting and weird and unacceptable, because it does go deeply into the absurdism that's happening when it comes to people being taken out of the equation and made into some sort of scapegoats, or actually more to prove a point that nobody should dare to speak the truth, seek the truth, or share information. So we should just all stay at home and watch gladiators on TV or whatever. So what I find to be very, very important, and what I want to address in my very, very short speech, is that we have to work together on all fronts. And one way we can work together is because I keep hearing stories about people that have been locked away or are under the threat of imprisonment for sharing knowledge, sharing information, sharing entertainment. And in particularly, there are many people that have been defined as hacktivists and have been a part of various groups of Anonymous that are sitting in prison for various different actions. And we need to know about them. It's not easy to help somebody if you don't know about their situation. So maybe a website with information about all the different people that are being unjustly put into prison would be, you know, people that are part of the political prisoners of the information revolution. They need our support. And I am very thankful that there are groups of people that are helping Barrett Brown and Jeremy Hammond, because most people in the world have no awareness about why they are in prison or that they exist. So we need to raise global awareness. But most importantly, we need to apply pressure. It costs money, it costs effort and dedication. You are obviously here now at this event to find a way to help. I strongly advise that we do a little bit more than we've decided to do. And I just want to say, you know, I can only be accountable for myself. So I want to do whatever I can do to help these two very courageous persons. And I want to thank them for the information they took great risk to provide to us, because it actually made me quite more informed about a situation that I do think belongs to the public domain. I also want to express my support for Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning and everyone that is currently under threat of imprisonment for making me a little bit more informed and for helping me as a public servant in the Icelandic parliament to make informed decisions. So you guys, you're all very, very important to me and so many others, people from all over the world. So thank you. Thank you, everybody that's there, for being there. And please do whatever you can to help and to share awareness and put some bucks into it as well, because we know it costs money. And thank you, everybody from the Barrett Brown and Jeremy Hammond support networks. And finally, goodbye. I hope that I see you guys in person one day.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive,